And welcome back. And we're at Grace Plains again, but this time we're talking to the Mayor of Mullagh, Jim Franks. Recently retired farmer and a man with a lot of knowledge and a lot of stories. And I'm looking forward to this one, Noel.
I wonder if a retired farmer is living the dream or whether he's just around the house too much and his wife gives him too many jobs. I suppose that could be something that would happen, but I guess we'll find out the answer to that and more as we continue on our chat with Jim Franks from Mullagh. Good evening, Jim. How are you?
Good evening, Noel and Parks. Yeah, thanks very much for inviting me along.
No,
and
thank
can
you.
I say right from the start that I'm not under my wife's feet. That's one thing I wouldn't be allowed to do and wouldn't want to do in retirement. In fact, I'll probably get told off more the other way that I'm never around enough. Anyway,
probably been a bit of pre-planning going on before the retirement was called, perhaps. You've always been a forward thinker, Jim, and
I
imagine that this occasion is no different.
So tell us a little bit about your farm at Mullagh. You still own it, so
The government sign out the front of it says 264 Mullagh Road, so that means we're 2.64 k's out of the town, just south. Our family's been on that farm since about 1890, having come into the district in 1865, but we'll push on that a bit later, I dare say. But yeah, so that's where it is, and obviously I'm the fourth generation on that farm.
I dare say, yeah. Annual rainfall quite similar to halfway down the 9 mile.
I did had a look at my statistics today actually, and just added a few up I just did the averages for the last 45 years, from 1975 to 20. So our average in those 45 years. Is 382 mil, or in our dinosaur terms, 15 inches and 28 points.
Have you got the high and the low?
Yeah, they got some interesting years here. Like my first year home from school, but I came home in 77, but 76 I still had a fair bit to do with the place, and that was a drought. 10 inches.
First year home.
10 inches, 253 mil. But then 2 years later in 78, we had 22 inches. 557 mil. 82, 4 years later, back to 8 inches, or 205 mil.
Crikey.
The next year, 83, 20 and a half inches, or 514 mil. Then we skipped to 92, which everybody remembers, the really wet harvest. We had 25 inches, or 629 that year. Back to then 94, 2 years later, 9 inches, 9 inches and 20 points, 230 mil. And, of course, everybody remembers 2016, we had 24 and a half inches, or 615 mil. So it's really
some of your country goes underneath then with the River Light flooding.
Yeah. Well, since I've been around, I think we've gone under four times. There's a lot more water outside the light than there is in the river itself when it floods, and it makes a bit of a mess. And
has it been through the house? Or?
No. It does. The rower line saves us because the rower line goes past our place.
Yep.
But in 1932 was a big flood that my dad used to talk about, and it went through our neighbour's house, the Jarman family's house, in that year. So just
across
the road.
Yeah.
So it caused a lot of damage. I've had to refence the paddocks that we've got down in that neck of the woods twice, three times.
Siblings?
Yes, I've got two sisters. They're both older than me. My mother had three children, one in the 40s, one in the 50s, and one in the 60s, albeit my two sisters are only 3 years apart, 1949 and 1952, but then I came along 9 years after my next sister. So, they all grew up in Mullagh. Then the older sister went off, went to teacher college and taught around the state, Peterborough, Williamstown, and then back in the city. And my younger sister married a farmer from Buckleboo, and they farmed over there till the late 70s, early 80s, and then he went with elders. So they've been all around the state as well.
Yeah.
So.
Your wife, Roz, we mentioned her before, that you don't get under her feet. How did you meet?
Well, we actually met at Rural Youth. She's a Long Plains girl. That was probably about 1978, I suppose. We started going out in 1979, and her family, the Hallian family, was one of the original inhabitants of the Long Plains area. Yeah, so we've been together now for 42 years and married for 1938. So it's been a lovely liaison we've done.
How did you propose?
Or very romantically.
Okay.
Yeah, well, just watching television one night and on a Sunday night, and I've been thinking about it a while. Perhaps I better bite the bullet. And I just think we should get married or what? And you got quite excited about it. And we thought, well, we'd better tell Mum and Dad, because they had visitors that night. My dad was a clay target shooter, and a couple of people from the neighbour from where we're doing this podcast, Brian Finch, and his wife were in home after a shoot, and they just wouldn't go home. They're having a few beers in a yard, and finally they went home, and I told Mum and Dad that Ros and I going to get married, and because they were thrilled, and well, we better go and tell your Mum and Dad, Ros, out at Long Plains. I never thought to ask for Ros's dad's hand in marriage. Just tell him.
Yep.
Anyway, they're in bed, and we got a bit of a grunt, and oh, congratulations, that's great. Yep. Anyway, the next Friday night when I went out there, I think George said to me, well, you got the response you deserved at that time of the night.
So George Hangham was your father-in-law?
Yeah.
I didn't know that because he taught me how to play golf.
Yeah.
Thanks, George.
Yeah, no, he's a marvellous golfer. I loved his golf.
He did.
Yeah.
What are you thanking him for?
He was one of the fantastic golfer. And he also taught Peter Freeman, who's Owen's club champion for about 20 times.
Yeah. Well, I think he's got his name on the Owen board and the Balaclava board, and down at Glenelg he played for many years.
He was an excellent golfer.
Mm.
So apart from Ros,
mm-hmm.
do you have any hobbies or sports you enjoy?
Yeah, well, I've always been involved with the footy club at Malala. Sounds immodest, I don't mean to be, but I was probably a pretty good junior. I peaked fairly early in my football career. Never quite went on quite on with as well as I should have in my senior career, but I had dicky ankles and they weren't helping me, and my dad was 40 years older than me, so I sort of thought if my ankles give out completely,
yep.
it's going to be a bit tough on Dad to do the farming on his own, being that much older. So
yep.
So I got into the administration side of the footy club.
Okay.
I was secretary I was on the committee for over 30 years, 34
wow,
years.
What an effort. Yep.
And I also played cricket as a colt and through to senior cricket. And cricket's probably a passion of mine. I love test cricket especially. We're members of the SACA and try to get down to the test match whenever we can.
Bring on the Poms this year.
Well, that's right. The Ashes are a little bit up in the air. We don't know what sort of team they're going to bring out, but
anyway. Hopefully a weak one. I guess we win.
Well, yeah, that's true. But we'd still like to see a contest.
How about you're trotting out Ros back in the early days? I'll go back even further than that. First wheels, first set of tyres.
I just had the farm ute, and our utes on the farm weren't farm utes really. They were for registration purposes. They were our second car, really. But no, Willie's Army Jeep that we used to use on the farm, which we've still got. So it was an HQ ute was the first one I was legally allowed to drive on the roads. I drove the HK before that, but I wasn't legal. So I trotted her out in the HQ to start with, and then on my 20th birthday, Dad bought me a Firethorn Red WB ute.
What brand new? We're talking showroom.
Brand new. Because, see, just... I'd been on the farm since I was 15, and I'd never earned any money off the farm. I never got paid, but I got kept and everything.
Yep.
And so I suppose that was part payment. So I never went without anything. I just didn't.
Yeah.
Just wasn't making any money. But that was fine by me. I didn't care because I was kept and
all your needs were being met.
Treated like a motherless calf. So I and I thought I was pulling my weight there. So, but that was the Red WB, and I got a fair bit of. A fair bit of flack when I sold that because we had it right until we got married. Took it away on the honeymoon, and I had been pulling on our first night. I remember pulling up outside the Hilton Hotel. We're staying at the Hilton on our first night. All these Jaguars and Mercedes out the front waiting to get in, and I just put up an old WB ute.
The boys from the bush. Yeah, we're back in town. Yeah.
But when we got married and had our first child, little girl Diana, thought we needed more than a ute, so I traded this beautiful Firethorn Red ute on an orange Chimera. Took a fair bit of flack over that from my peers, but that was a good car. They used to call them a supercar. That was a great car, but it wasn't a Firethorn Red WB ute.
No,
I think the Firethorn Red WB ute's probably worth more than the Chimera.
Well, that's right. Yeah, she'd be worth a quid now, that's for sure.
And for how many kids did you end up having?
Diana was our first one, and then we had Michael about 3 years later, and then 6 years later, we had David. So we got a boy and two girls.
Excellent.
David would probably be known to a few people that listen to this podcast because he had quite a stint with Cloudbreak Grain Marketing Services.
Yes.
And, he really enjoyed that. He was doing that while he was at uni. And, Ed Scomps, the principal there, had really taught David a lot and set him up in good stead for the rest of his career that he's pursuing now. So,
yep. Which is still grain marketing?
Or no, no, no. Well, he's a commodity sales and trader for NAB Bank in Sydney.
Oh, wow,
so
he
still
okay.
trades in in wheat and barleys and have gas and cotton and all sorts of things. So,
Just a bit, it's in Sydney, currently enjoying lockdown.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty frustrating.
Where'd you study? So you went to school. How long did you go to school for?
Yeah, went through Malalar Primary and... Might I say I was Ducks of Metalhead Primary on the honour board there, just saying.
This is all about pumping up your tyres.
This is just the forum.
I'd be the only one that remembered that, except for everybody I tell.
Yeah.
And then I did did 3 years at Gawler High. Mum and Dad had me actually booked into St Peter's College, and I didn't want to go there because all my mates were going to Gawler High, and but I regret that now. I should have gone into Saints. I think I would have made a few good mates down there. But I had a good time where I was. But like I said, Dad was 40 years older than me. And when I came to 15, I just said to Mum and Dad, look, I think I'm finding what I'm learning at school pretty irrelevant. I might as well come home and learn what I'm going to do for the rest of my life with my dad. And Dad had a little bit of ill health at that time. And so they said, no, yeah, okay. Well, I'm so surprised when they said yes.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I was home at 15 and a half.
So what was... what was your earliest recollection on the farm? Just turning the clock back a little bit.
Well, I've got a pretty good memory. People keep telling me I've got a really good memory, but then
that's called a strong feminine side.
The trouble is though that when I use that memory to perhaps tell a story about somebody that and they've forgotten it, I get accused of. We don't remember. We didn't do that. I get accused of lying.
Making stories up.
Tough gig, which I don't. But anyway, look, my earliest recollection was I was too small to reach the back door handle. So I remember Dad was in the shearing, they were shearing, and I'd taken something around. It might have been even a basket of morning smoker. I would have only been just four, if that. And I remember knocking on the door, coming out from the shearing shed, and because Mum would have to come and answer it, and I sang All of My Lovin' to her by the Beatles. Still know all the words. And and then also when I was four, I know it was 1965 because... It was the day Dad bought a big header, a 105 John Deere. And in 1965, it had a 22-foot front on it. It was actually the biggest header in the world, in fact, at the time. And I remember the day that was delivered. And it was a terrible wind, a little bit like yesterday, actually.
Yep.
Terribly windy day. And I was holding Dad's hand as we went down to shut a gate that was swinging in the wind. And as we're walking back, the bloke by the name of Dave Kirby drove in with this big header, and there she was, and I remember that as like it was yesterday.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's my preferred.
John Deere and John Deere's have been a thing you've stuck with.
Yeah, pretty well. Well, certainly with that John Deere header. We actually went to Case International headers after that, but we've stuck to John Deere tractors. So yeah, and I ended up having another John Deere header. My last one I had on the farm.
So the last one would have had auto steer on it. The first one. Maybe not.
No cabin even on that. It was a petrol.
Oh, okay.
It was petrol.
Petrol.
And,
what could possibly go wrong?
Yeah, standard petrol. We'd pump a big day, we'd pump a 44-gallon on a quart-stroke pump.
Do you remember what the model was?
Yeah, 105.
Like petrol motor. Any issues lighting fires back then? Or?
No, the motor was up the top.
Yeah.
Thank heavens. But the
motors are still up the top when they're diesel, but they still managed to set fire.
There's no worries there, but I mean, the header that Dad had before that was a 780 Massey. And that had the engine underneath, and that used to give Dad nightmares.
Yes.
Because it was always running in the street. It never caught a fire. Well, they dab one, but it wasn't a bad one. But it's a really interesting fact, I suppose, about our farm. We've never had a PDO header on the farm. We've always had SP headers.
Okay.
My grandfather bought the first, his first SP header in 1932. Apparently 1932, I said before, it was a flood, so it was a really wet year, really good year. The barley had all gone down and lodged, and they tried to muck around. Well, the previous year they had these old ale harvesters, which were horse-drawn machines, and apparently my grandfather knew that they weren't going to get through that. So they bought the first Massey auto header with an old Fordson motor on it.
Okay.
12-foot. Yeah, so we've had SP headers since 1932.
Crikey.
12-foot.
That's impressive. That is actually quite wide.
Yeah, well, early 40s was just after the war, it must have been. They bought another one, so a 14-foot. So they had two auto headers working. They were going around with 26 feet, so, and bagging it all off.
That's back when men were men.
My word.
For sure.
You ever done much off-farm employment?
Yeah, I have, Parks. Yeah, right from, like I said, Mum and I wasn't getting any wages off the farm, so a lot of us from Malala used to go down to the Jepps Cross Market and work on the stockyards there. So I started down there about 78, I think. And that was just a bit of cash I had in my pocket. And I worked down there, worked up there until the year 2000. That's when they shifted to Dublin. And that was just out the gateway to the Dublin sale yards, which is out my back road, really, our southern boundary. So I used to drive down there about 8 or 9 Ks. And so I worked there for another 14 years, I suppose. So 30 odd years in the sale yards, which was great. We had a lot of fun and met a lot of characters. And it was, I really enjoyed it. And also, well, it had its moments, I must admit. It's not much fun walking around mustering sheep or droving sheep, trying to draft them in the middle of the night in the rain with oil skins on, and it was pretty...
Yeah.
It's some ordinary nights. It always used to rain on a Monday night, I don't know why. And along with that, I also did a lot of work in the live sheep industry down at Reg Pierce's feedlot on Williams Road at Two Wells. And I worked there for a lot of years when they had a boat in. I used to do a lot of the drafting down there. Used to just A and B the weathers, good tops and the culls, or the not so top, I should say, A's and B's. And then when they trucked out, we used to I used to do all the counting. I like counting sheep. Something I've just got a bit of skill, which I quite enjoy doing.
Count the legs, divide by four.
Yeah, just about like that. Yes.
Yeah. So, did you have stock on your farm?
Yeah, we did. Yeah.
So you had a good sheepdog you took with you to market?
Not really, but I took a dog to the market, and I used to get stirred about my first dog, old Hemsley, because the Franks family name is Hemsley, and I was never going to call a son, if I ever had one at that stage, Hemsley, so I called my dog Hemsley. And so everybody knew Hemsley, but he used to get in the right spots, but just didn't bark very much. But anyway, after that, I had some pretty reasonable dogs, and nothing gives you more satisfaction than having a sheep dog that really works well. Yard dogs, of course, they weren't too mad for paddocks, but yeah, it was good time. I enjoyed that. Actually, Hemsley had another claim to fame. We're talking about my Firethorn Red WB Ute. The first weekend I had it, you know what a new car smells like.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, just beautiful. And I get a phone call from my neighbour, Peter Irish, and he said, "Jim, oh, Hemsley's over here. He looks like he's a bit lost." So he went for a wander. No, it was Pete, I'll come over and get him. So I took the ute over. So I was obviously going to put him under the canopy, under the tonneau cover.
Yep.
We got over there, and he was a bit disorientated. He was that pleased to see us that he jumped straight in my brand new ute, and he'd been rolling in a carcass somewhere.
Of course he had.
So I lost my brand new WB Firethorn Red Ute smeller. And then Ros sprayed perfume in it to try and that a mixture of that and the sheep guts didn't work at all for me.
That's funny. So you've done a few other little jobs along the way. Any of them absolutely piqued your interest and maybe changed your thoughts? If I couldn't be a farmer, I would enjoy doing something else?
Oh, not really. I was always destined to be a farmer, Noel. I think I probably would have, because I enjoyed working with sheep. So, yeah, I thought about if I was doing not farming, I could have been a stock agent perhaps, or perhaps would have joined the armed forces. Perhaps it'll be another bit of a thing, but...
We're building some brand new submarines down in Adelaide soon, so...
a hunt for Red October.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I suppose I could go back a step, talking about the live sheep export. Can I go do that?
Absolutely.
And just one interesting little thing. Do you remember when the protests were on, when they didn't...
Yes.
That was the late 70s, and the farmers were going down... Because they couldn't get the sheep. No one would load the sheep. The wolfies wouldn't allow us to load the sheep. So the farmers were going down in their utes and trucks and stopping at all the stoplights and waiting. When they turned red, they wouldn't move, and holding up all the traffic at peak hour. It's a marvellous day. It's great fun.
Yeah.
And of course, that all culminated in a rally at Victoria Square. After the rally, it was all over, and I was with my dad, my brother-in-law, who was likes to farming at Buckleboo. He was over here, and our local elders agent, Trevor Bowyer. And I said, "What are we going to do now?" And so we said, "Has anybody ever seen a sheep boat?" And we hadn't. So we drove down to Port Adelaide, and here's the sheep boat. It was called the Iran Cremona, and it's docked. And, of course, there was no security in those days. So we walked straight up, and we ended up walking up the gangplank. We're on the boat. So there's four of us wandering around, and we'd done quite a tour on our own for about 10 minutes, and then somebody's just stopped us and says, in a German accent, broken English in German, what are you blokes doing? And he was a bit, you can see he's a bit concerned about who we were. And we explained that we were farmers and we'd been there trying to, you know, help get you loaded and getting out of here. His name was Old Otto. He was the chief engineer. So he said, oh, that, he just, he befriended us straight away like that. He said, oh, come and meet the captain. So we go and meet the captain, and I can't remember the captain's name. Doesn't matter. Anyway, the captain clicks his fingers like that, and out come these, the crew was Filipino. They bring an armful of beer, and we're sitting down drinking beer with the captain.
On the bridge.
Yeah. So then and Dad said, well, look, we'd love to have a real good tour of the boat to see how these ship, these sheep are transported. No worries yet. Otto, you take these boys for a tour. So yeah. It took us an hour and a half to tour the boat. It's actually an old, it was an old converted passenger liner that they'd converted into a sheep boat. So he took us for this marvellous tour right down into the engine and up in all the pens and everywhere. It was just great. And then we go back. We've got to have more beer. We've been Germans, of course. And so then the captain says, well, you must stay for tea or dinner. So we stayed for dinner and more beer. And then there was this beautiful cedar wood lined stateroom in it, which was for the captain when it was a passenger liner. And he said, we're not allowed to open this up anymore. So we can't afford it, but for you boys, we'll do it.
Really?
So here we are after this lovely meal that was served. We were waited on hand and foot by these Filipino staff or crew. And then we end up drinking more beer in the stateroom afterwards. And then we got home about up past drunk. And
more front than John Martin's is what they would have said, I reckon, in the old days.
It was just a marvellous experience and great day. And
absolutely.
I remember I've still got the menu home because I had night menu. And the next day, Dad telegrammed the captain back and thanked him for the hospitality.
That's a fantastic story.
Telegrammed him.
That was a bit of fun.
Yeah, no, that's a brilliant story. In all your time on the farm, Jim, during your days, did you diversify your farm at all? If so, what did you do? What was the drivers behind it?
Yeah, well, I suppose the main thing was we went from the normal mixed farm where you had your fallow, your sheep, and a third fallow, third sheep, third cropping sort of thing.
Yep.
And then we sort of decided that back in the early 80s, I suppose, Dad sort of said, well, I reckon we can make more money out of a crop of peas than we can out of running the sheep.
Yep.
Because we used to drive, Dad always ran Weathers there when I first came home. Then we did get a mob of ewes when I came home as well. So then, we phased the sheep out, went continuous cropping, and then stopped the fallowing, of course, which, I mean, the fallowing was just soil degradation and drying it all out. We'd fallow, we'd cultivate it during the spring, we'd harrow it, we'd get a summer rain, we'd cultivate it again and harrow it, and another working before sowing and then sowing, and just ridiculous. So we went to minimum tillage, I suppose, and then finally in through to knife points and inline press wheels, in frame press wheels, I should say. And that was all for moisture conservation, and we thought making the most out of every acre we had. It was a little bit of a shame because I love my sheep work, so I've missed not having sheep on the farm. We used to buy Weathers in over the summer and run on the stubbles.
Yep.
But, and we did quite well out of them. That's, I suppose, the main diversification. We went from the norm, which was back 40 years ago, to
late
the continuous
farming.
Cropping. What we did now, but we always kept our waters up and all. I've still got all my fences. The place is really well fenced, so it's still all the individual paddocks, really, which is a bit old-fashioned, I know, but that's how I like it.
Do you ever pick up a handpiece? Shearing? Crutching?
Have you ever seen a cow with a mouth organ?
No.
It's a bit like me with a handpiece. they just don't. I tried, but God, I kick and I sweat and I go, no, I leave it to the experts. I did a bit of crutching in my time, but shearing, leave it to the experts. Just wasn't for me. Yeah.
No.
And of course, we used to do our own with a handpiece, the combs and cutters were normally blunt where you're doing fly blown stuff with dags. Bloody hard work, I reckon. Leave it to the experts.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree more.
Most exciting thing you've seen develop in agriculture since you've been on the farm?
Obviously, auto steer's the obvious one, but we'll get away from that. I just suppose it's the I suppose I've seen it from bags to bulk. Bags were – I came in right at the end of bags. I still remember bag barley at Malalar, and the mouse plague just shredding the bags in the late 60s, 68 and 69. So to go to bulk was a marvellous thing, really. We still had bag seed and bag super, for that matter, for my first few years home from school. So, yeah, that was a big thing. I suppose just the technology in the implements we have nowadays, you know, the computerised stuff you have, and it's marvellous to the way it all works, but it's taken the bush mechanic out of it, more or less. You can't really fix your own stuff nowadays. No. But so, yeah, even in the – well, my dad passed away in year 2000. If he could just see the advancements made in that 20 years – he would blow him away. And just getting back to auto steer, he would think that was absolutely marvellous because he could roll a smoke while it was going along. You know, just unreal. I suppose, going back another step, when the tractors and the headers first came out with cabins, you know, you were sitting in a header, you're out of the chaff and the dirt, and the tractor was a bit more comfortable. Another little story about a tractor cabin. My dad bought a John Deere tractor, a 3020 with 8-speed power shifts. It was the first of the power shifts in 1969. Well, Claude Meester up at Butte, the John Deere dealer at Butte. Anyway, lovely, lovely machine for its day. But, you know, slowly the next generation of John Deere tractors that came out was the 30 series with the Soundguard cab and everything. Pretty, you know, state of the art. Anyway, it was about 1977, 78. We were sort of looking at that, but we'd had those really bad droughts in 76 and 77, so there wasn't a lot of money around. But old Claude Meester, Mr. Meester, he'd go through to town about once a week, and about once a month on those trips, he'd call in home to see Dad, because Dad was always keen on my 4230. And, of course, this is, like I said, after the 30 series had probably been out a few years, and Dad said to Claude, "Look, Claude, it's a beautiful tractor," he said, "but, you know, the 30 series has been out for 5 or 6 years. You know, there must be due to be a new tractor out, and a new series out. Not the 40 series, for instance, must be coming out, surely." And old Claude, Mr. Meese, they just looked at Dad and says, "But Reg, how could they make them any better?" And Dad says, "I suppose you're right, Claude. There's a good point, that." Anyway, the next year the 40 series did come out, and Lester Rosenberg had one here in Owen, and that was the we bought that. It was the first 40 in the state. So, yeah, coming out, we've been going from the old open station tractor to the air conditioned radios and what it was just
AM radio with a blower. It wasn't a real fancy air conditioner, but it was a darn sort better than anything we'd had in the past.
I think it was good.
Well, I think there was a fan before there was an integrated blower even.
Yeah, well, Dad put his own cabin on the old 105 John Deere, and that didn't have air conditioning, and it would, well, they were out of the dust. By hell, it got hot in there. And mobile phones, another big thing that people take for granted nowadays, but gee, what an innovation, what you can't do on your phone. I mean, you can do all your grain marketing out when you're harvesting.
Do you enjoy grain marketing, Jim?
No, I don't.
So you left all that to David.
Well, I was doing it a fair while before David was involved, but you know, you can do so many things while you're out there on the tractor with your mobile phone.
Especially while the mobile phone is working.
Yeah, well, that's true.
But strangely enough, they just don't work that reliably all the time, do they?
That's true.
So, funniest thing that you've seen happen on your own farm or on your neighbour's farm over the journey. How many years have you been farming?
Yeah, I farmed for 44. You probably had to be there, I suppose, but my dad loved his Chev trucks. And we had we still got a home on the farm, the old 1954 Chev. Anyway, in the mid-80s, we bought this C60 Chev, bright yellow tipper. Oh, we thought that was bloody marvellous, have a tipper. Anyway, we're reaping down south of Kurrunny in called the Pistol Club nowadays. And we used to put the baby Quinn trailer behind her, so, you know, she grossly overloaded. It had about 12.5-13 tonne of wheat on it.
Of course,
But no brakes in the trailer, but that was fine. Had a bit of pipe going from the trailer to the truck that looked like an air hose, but it was actually the conduit for the electrical system that didn't work either. Dad always said, "You need a right-hand blinker." I don't know why he didn't want the left-hand. Yeah. We always turn a righty, so don't worry about left-hand blinker. But anyway, we got away with it for a lot of years. Anyway, I was still reaping. She was full, and I said, "Dad, you take that home. You knock off." So, okay, he gets it in, because it wasn't a very speedy machine, of course. And anyway, Dad's going down the road with the old truck and trailer, going through the big S-bend, which is Kurrunny Crossing. Mm-hmm. And as he goes through, he must have been just crawling, window down, smoke out, of course, and these blokes went through in a ute and went past him. It was when these super soaker water pistols were in vogue.
Yeah.
And they pumped her up and squirted the old man as they were going through, put his smoke out and got him all wet. Well, he was ropeable. And I got home a couple of hours later and went over to have a beer with him. And I said, how'd you get it? Got home all right? And he said, these bloody cowboys, he said. You should have seen what they did to me. I mean, those bloody water pistols and put me smoke out. And I just cracked up. And when I'd laugh so much, he could actually then see the funny side of it. And
just imagine if it was one of his cigarettes today. They're a lot more expensive today than what they were back then, I'd imagine.
He wouldn't have been happy, so yeah. And I suppose, so many stories, sort of harvest stories. And in the latter years when I had my own truck and trailer, like a bigger unit, and a chaser bin, I had Ian Stewart driving the truck for me and Kim Taylor, who a lot of you would know, driving the chaser bin. And we'd lost Kim this year, unfortunately, God rest his soul. Mm. And just the banter with those blokes just during harvest. And then later on, we had Vaughan Chenouth too. And, well, you can imagine all those blokes together. Well, like I said, we used to call ourselves Dad's Army.
I just wonder how you'd actually get any work done.
We just had so much fun. And, that was fun. I'll keep putting my dad in it a bit.
He's not here to back it up.
Dad can't back it up. I was reaping in a paddock next to Dean Curnow one day down towards the Light River, and Dad had gone home to get me another bin. It was a big old rectangular Nelson bin that we had. It was one of the first ones we ever had.
Yep.
And the big handles on it used to rattle them. It was noisy.
Yeah.
Really noisy going along. Dad was a bit deaf and he had the ear mope. I was always rolling a smoke, of course. Anyway, Dean and I are heading the same way in our headers, and we're watching Dad come along the road. And I reckon he's gone probably a K and a half. And it's come unhooked, he didn't know. And he's started down the road. And because he was on an old open station street, no UHF, and Dean just calls me up and says, your old man doesn't know, does he? Yeah. I said, no. And all of a sudden, you see him look around, and he goes, he obviously said, excuse my French, oh, shit. So he's turned around, and he's tromped the old track. The big pile of plume of black smoke comes out to go back, but he doesn't think anybody's watching. He's got to get back before now. No one sees him, but hooked her up. And he came and said, oh, got on all right, Dad? Yep, no worries.
Yeah, no worries at all. Nothing to see here.
Nothing to see here. Yeah, that was funny.
Oh, that is funny. Yeah.
The piece of equipment you've done the most damage to, or seen, or someone on your farm has done the most damage to.
Yeah, well, that's quite an easy one for me. The first axial flow header we had, got rid of the old 105 John Deere. We bought a brand new 1420, beautiful little machine. It was before Case actually had it. It was just International 1420. And I'm reaping a paddock of peas this day, and the box was almost full, and all of a sudden the front wheel has just gone down. It's just collapsed. And it's an old well. It's caved in an old well.
Oh.
I mean, we've been on that farm since 1890, and Dad had never known of anything. And so the big wheel hasn't bottomed out, so all the weight has gone on the throat elevator. So this is a nightmare. So we couldn't get her out until we emptied the box of peas. So because she'd gone down so much, that was on the auger side, so we couldn't put the auger around, otherwise we'd hit the ground.
It's gone that far down.
So in those days, you could unload the auger when it was back in transport position, right around the back. So we went out the front end loader and emptied peas into the front end loader and into one of the Chev trucks. And so finally got that half empty and pulled her out backwards out through from this hole, and as it comes out, and the comb is on about a 40-degree angle. That's how straight it was. It was up about 6 feet one side, and then he hit the ground because the throat elevator was completely twisted. And I'm, oh, God, what am I? Anyway, we rang Jeff Boxall, our mechanic at Hamley Bridge, who was a terrific bloke, is a terrific bloke, I should say. And we got the comb off. It was a bit precarious, but we got it off, and then he took all the throat elevator off. We took it down to a mob of chassis aligners in Adelaide, and there you can see the marks on it where they heated it and came back, and it was as square as...
Good as new.
Square, good as new, but it was off the... Yeah, we missed probably nearly a week's reaping, but...
Only a week?
Yeah.
That's pretty good going to have a repair like that.
But I just remember looking at it, I thought... I screamed. It was just awful. And this was old well that actually caved in, because down at the bottom of it, there's old wire, groups of wire and stuff, and that was old triangular wire before the round wire that they could draw a round wire. It was triangular.
That's how old it was. I've never heard of triangular wire before.
So Yeah, so that was a...
Was it near a house?
Was it a yard or something? Reasonably close to an old ruin of a house, which was a farmyard in its day, yeah. Probably 200 metres, I suppose, from the house, so yeah.
It just took somebody to drive the heaviest wheels directly over it.
And it nailed you. So, in those days, you used to drive over a foxhole, that sort of thing, but after that, you used to drive around a match hole. I wouldn't be able to put your wheel anywhere where there was a bit of a hollow or a hole, so.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was a nightmare. I suppose one other thing I did once was, it was the first day's reaping and I was determined it had to be started this day. And I was at the, I'd been at the Dublin sale yards that morning and I tried to rush out of there, so I'd get home and go reaping. I shifted all down to a paddock down towards Lower Light or down towards the Light River. Repped, and I'm colourblind, so I have a bit of trouble seeing green, except for John Deere, of course. and I ripped a strip along the fence and even I could see that shit, there's a lot of green stuff in that.
You're a week early.
I was a week early.
Yeah.
So I got the neighbour over there to help me shift because Dad wasn't around and Roz was working or something. And so the lady next door, she helped me shift. I got back to a paddock of feed barley that was dead right because this time's going by. And I thought, oh, hell, I still better get a moisture check done on this. So I did it, repped the strip. I'm pretty sure it was okay. Anyway, so I jumped in the ute with this moisture up to go up the Malala. And I'm going down a track, and I used to go through a little S to keep on a track where there was a big gate post there. And all of a sudden, I heard the ute just go, ooh, she pulled up a bit. What the hell's that? Well, blow me down. I still had the comb trail hooked onto the ute. I'd forgotten about that. And I've gone through this S and and this left-hand wheels of the comb trailer have taken out this concrete strainer that was in concrete. And it had three gates hanging off. It was a major gateway. Oh, dear. One of the axles backed at about a right angle. And I snuck her out to Pickle Shaman's the next morning about up past five before anybody was around. We could see. But the moisture was okay.
Oh, well, that's a great thing.
I got reaping. Yeah. I forgot. Yeah, just took off with the cone trailing and being really annoying.
I've got to be probably drop myself in here once. I've unhooked the comb from the comb trailer and then drove straight over the comb trailer.
I just drove forwards.
Yep. So that one snuck up the Goldies, yeah.
Late at night, so I know I can see it.
Oh, God. It's amazing.
It's easily done.
Oh, I guess it is easily done. Have you ever bought a lemon that you're happy to admit to?
Well, like I said, I'm keep dobbing me dad in. I feel so. But I inherited the damn thing. We've been pretty lucky over the years because Dad took great pride in his machine. We always had pretty good gear that I sort of kept up. Well, I bought pretty good stuff as well, I think. Yep. But Dad had bought, and it's what I had when we came home from school, the 701 Massey baler. I think balers are the most unreliable things in the world, really. Most people's stories, I reckon, would involve the baler. It's just a small square, of course.
Yep.
Engine function. Had an old Austin motor on it, which wasn't powerful enough to drive it to when you start baling, heavy cereal.
Yep.
It was like an old stationary baler on wheels, really. I mean, the pickup, it had the finger pickup. Just to get the hay to the chamber was a major operation.
Production.
Yep. Up the finger pickup, up a big slatted elevator, across an auger.
It's
up pretty high by this time. Then that had to get down into the chamber. So there's this thing called a magpie, which is a big thing with a gooseneck on it, pushing that down into the chamber, and hopefully it didn't push just it down when the plunger was coming through. Yep. So the timing was critical.
Yep.
So all this is happening, and the bloody thing never tied anyway. and the chamber was about five bales long, so you drop one, you drop five. We never did any baling with that without somebody obviously driving the tractor, but Dad always walked along the side of it and watched every knot.
God.
Watched every knot. It was I remember one day she wasn't going too well, and the old man said to me, "I'd just like to get that bloody thing and park it fair on the railway line." And I couldn't disagree with him more. So
yeah, Jim's house is on the Gann railway line, so that would have done a fair bit of damage to the baler.
And it would have taken great delight in doing it. But we sold that and bought a little New Holland 317, and that was the most marvellous baler that's ever put string into. That was a great.
It might have been, or it might have just been. A good bailer as compared to the last bucket that you had.
Yeah, they still are a good bailer.
Yeah, she was a good little bailer. And yeah, the only other thing, we had a bit of fun years ago. Myself and Greg Tucker and Andy Griffiths and Richard Konzag formed Malala Windrowing. They used to call us Wankers Windrowing.
Oh, yeah, I remember.
And we bought a bit of machinery. One of those things was a Coon mower conditioner. And we agonised over whether to buy that. It was a fair bit more expensive than the other ones we were looking at. Yeah, I bought it. It was a good, heavy machine, but I was never a fan of that either. I reckon that was 11.
Okay.
I don't reckon it cut anywhere. The other boys sort of kept talking it up. And said, it's a good machine. But I said, have a look at this. We used to cut hay to get the ryegrass.
Yep.
Well, it never cut a blade of ryegrass in its life. It used to just push that over. That anyway, but no, it was nowhere near as bad as a 701 baler anyway.
Few stressful times in the farming days then, but you always get a break at the end of the year. Where do you like to go for a holiday, or where's the favourite place you've ever been for a holiday?
Roz and I and the kids, for about 25 or 6 years in a row, went down to a place down the south called Karakalinga, which is down by Normanville.
Yep.
It's just a beautiful beach and everything like that. So that's probably one of our favourite, it is our favourite place. We end up buying a beach house down there.
Nice.
And which we don't use enough, of course. There's not many beach houses are used enough, but no. So that's probably our favourite place. But I've also been around a little bit too. I just love being away, really, and I just, most places I go to are my favourite place. But
yeah.
So I've been to the Kimberleys with Roz, and I did a 5-week trip up there in 2017 with Greg and Jude Tucker, and that was the longest I'd ever been off the farm in my life, was 5 weeks. I'd never been away. If I didn't do it, it didn't get done. So that was a great trip. Done a couple of few overseas trips. I've done two John Deere trips, one to America and one to Europe, and they were just tremendous fun. You're away with, 30 odd farmers and their wives, so they're all like-minded people, and you're all on you've all got the same interests. So it's really fantastic. I recommend anybody that can go on one of these machinery company trips go, because it's just great fun. So.
Yep.
Plus, Roz and I have been to Europe on our own as well, because our younger son David, was backpacking around there in 2013 on his gap year. So we met up with him over there and drove from Rome to Paris, which was character building. Only nearly killed us all twice. That was all right.
He's still here.
Still here, yeah. And of course, I've seen a lot of Australia too with the Variety Club. I did 16 years of volunteering for the Variety Club. In the support vehicle, in the four-wheel drive event.
Yep.
And a lot of those years I spent with Wayne Heaslip in the ute, and we did a lot of talking and shared a lot of stories, and it was just a lovely time. It was with the likes of Slippy and four other great mates. So they were great trips, and we raised a lot of money for charity and saw a lot of Australia. So that was all good.
Good idea taking Slippy, because you know that if you ran out of fuel, there'd surely be a fuel truck come along any time now and just give you a little trickle.
I have heard that. One day we're out on Mount Ives Station, and we got a bit bushed. Slippy and I had the water cart on. We had to cart water back for the toilets and showers for the four-wheel drive entrance, and our mud map wasn't working. And anyway, the water tank we'd filled up with water to go back, that sprung a leak. And we're just eating our last chicken crimpy. And I said, Slippy, we've got no water, we've got no food, and we're lost. I said, we're buggered and far from home. Anyway, we found a hill somewhere and got the UHFs working, and we finally got some help. But a lot of fun.
Excellent. Okay, that's just about wrapped it up. But before we do, what's been the highlight of your time in agriculture?
Yeah, I thought about that a bit. Once again, like I said, I don't mean to sound like a dinosaur, but I'm talking about my dad a lot, and he was a great mentor and a great mate to me, and so probably a highlight was working with my dad in such a close relationship. And don't get me wrong, we had a few blues in our time, but we never held a grudge. That night we still have a beer, and the air would be clear, and that'd be great. And sometimes I was a little bit short-tempered with him myself, a little bit impatient, and I regret that now looking back. You're always wise after the fact, but that was great working with dad, and sort of learning the ropes through him. And when I was brought into the partnership on the farm, so it was R.C. Franks and Son, I thought that was pretty special. I was pretty young at the time, so that was a big thing for me at the time, and I still cherish that. And I suppose, there's nothing more satisfying than growing a nice crop. You know, you pull the fruits of your labours into it, and then you're rewarded with a lovely crop, and doing it all properly, and in the end result, through the practice and that we've done now, I think it's important to leave your farm in a better state than when you took it over. And that's not a reflection on the quality of your father's farming, it's just the way things evolve and the better technology and the better methods you've got. So I think I'd like to think the farm was in a better state now than when I first came home, and that's rewarding. So
it's a fantastic way of looking at it, for sure. And it doesn't really matter whether you're in a farming background or butcher, baker, candlestick maker. Your philosophy probably should still be the same. Mm. Leave it better than what you found.
Yeah, that's right.
This should be everybody's goal.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Jim. I reckon that about wraps it up.
All right, boys. Thank you very much for that. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Yeah, no, thank you very much for taking time out of your evening, Jim. It is getting on in lateness now. You're probably just about due for bedtime.
I always enjoy yarn, so...
Yeah, no, I really appreciate you.
Thank you very much, and thank you to Heatley Barbecues and Errors Rural Services and the Cast of Thousands. So thank you.
Thank you all.